How'd you do? This is a show from Radio. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners. Each week, we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond. Artists, get on with it.
You're listening to Shelana Gig, a radio piece produced during Dartmoor Radio Residential with Stellaria Media and supported by Futures On Air Project. This creation is a collective work done in 2 days and broadcasted on Access FM on the 17th of September 2023. An idea from Karine Demange, Jihan Marasinga, Kerry Priest and Maggie Shade.
There are bilberries growing out of that dead branch. And in fact, this tree has been hit by lightning or something. And part of that huge branch is broken off. And where the decay has formed, there are bilberries. And of course, there's also a lot of moss. That's really neat.
That's what I was about to say. It's not moss, it's food.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, this is along the western side of the British Isles, in the places where the air is really clean. You sometimes see that moss lands on trees and then you get like ferns growing out of the moss. So there's a whole like little mini ecosystems and happening on the tree branches. And that's the sign of it being a temperate rainforest.
And we've got a lot of rainforest here in Devon, actually, haven't we? Yeah.
Yeah, there are some really amazing spots on Dartmoor. Yeah, Wistman's Wood.
Yeah.
There are some spots on the High Moors where it's just... where basically they've got rocks on the ground, so there's not been any grazing animals. So it's ancient woodlands which are untouched for thousands of years. And some of the trees are completely covered in moss. And it's really magical when you go there.
I've seen sheep feeding off of the moss from the stones, from the boulders, you know. You're just looking and then you'll see a sheep, the head appearing from behind a boulder, and then it starts noshing away on a bit of moss, you know.
Okay.
I mean, I've never heard of sheep eating moss before. But there's nothing else. I mean, look at the hillside there. There's nothing else for them to feed on but moss.
Yeah.
And yet they're there. And I mean, they're behind. They're probably sheep looking at us right now, right?
Yeah.
They're wondering what on earth we're doing.
But yeah, it's good because I heard that at Wistman's Wood, they've put like a grazing barrier around to try and naturally extend the wood by, I think, 50 meters or something.
Oh.
So, and that would be a good model. They should just do that for every woodland. Just like have a barrier around it so it gets bigger. And I think they're trying to join the woodlands together a bit in the lowlands to create corridors for the wildlife as well.
Mm.
There's a lot of rewilding type stuff going on, and there's a lot of work happening with the peat as well, peat wetting, which is a really important source of carbon sequestration. So it's really, yeah, there's quite a lot going on.
It's so encouraging too.
Yeah.
Because I remember you were speaking of the Forest of Ardennes in France, but there's the Forest of Arden in Shakespeare territory. So I remember when I first moved here thinking, I've got to see the Forest of Arden, you know, and I'm going to go there. And I went and it's nothing, you know, and that's our past here. I mean, you know, that the forests have been sort of wrecked, really, and so that there's nothing left of the Forest of Arden, which is kind of sad. I mean, it's not kind of sad, it's tragic. So it's wonderful to hear, you know, that they're trying to extend Wisman's Wood. 50 metres, that's a 50-metre success, you know? That's fantastic. And here, I mean, we're all tucked away. And this is a rainforest, you know? And I didn't even know it existed. It's just so cool to be here.
Redress the balance and make amends. A button and a cushion, a place marker, a bookmark to return to, a milestone.
Because of the river, maybe, that we can hear.
Yeah.
It's actually about the Ardennes. Now, a big part of Belgium is the Ardennes. So you have Ardennes in France, in England, and also in Belgium. And we don't have the same Shakespearean tragedy than here, because we kept it somehow.
Well, that's great. Because when it was written, it was a comedy, and now it is a tragedy. But it's good to know that someplace else there is a Forest of Ardennes. You know, and it lives on. And you got to have your honeymoon there. It's just the best.
Yeah.
Does this river run west to east? Is that, and that's north? I'm just thinking north, east, south, west. Which way is this river going?
I don't understand it.
Why is this so important to see where's the north and the west? I don't get it.
Ah, that's because we get little micro weather systems in Devon, you know, and you might read, oh, the wind is coming from the southwest today, and you'll have a vague idea of what the weather might be like. You're going to have mild weather with maybe some wet, you know, in it. But so you think, oh, yes, well, generally speaking, the wind is from the southwest. But then you'll be like, hang on, the wind isn't coming from the southwest. It's actually coming from the north, and it's a microsystem that's bringing in some cold weather. And so it's just good to kind of know how things are shifting. It's also great when you put out the laundry, you know, to know which way the wind is blowing.
Yeah.
So this is the Meavy. The Plym is over that way, and that ends up in Plymouth.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
So, yeah. So they're going that way, and then they'll be going more south toward the sea. But there's so many reasons also, just... I mean, the colder wind comes from the north, you know, and then also just knowing the directions where the moon is going to rise from and where the sun rises and where the full moon will come up in the east, like the sun, in the... You see? I get myself in a tizzy and I get confused. So we've got the new moon now,
yeah. So
you don't see it at all, which means that the sun is not looking at it, which means that... It's in the west. Am I correct? So it's all of those things that in the city, if you live in an urban space, I mean, I never thought of things like that. But now that I live in the country, everything is about, oh, the moon rises here, but if it's a crescent moon, it rises there. And the wind's coming this way today, so I expect there'll be some rain at some point. Or, oh, no, well, I think we'll have dry weather. Because, do you know, you can really... You really kind of know where you are. It's like orientation, I suppose. You're oriented to... And there are magnetic fields. And all the rest of it, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just nice to know.
Actually, about this tree...
Yes.
There is a Japanese tradition of taking care of trees.
Yes.
And still exploit the woods, but taking care of them so that in some forests there is a technique which has a name I forgot, where you can see this forest, you have an old branch, trunk holding, and you have kind of a new forest growing in it, and they just cut this. They never cut the tree.
Yeah.
They just cut the small leaves, so you have all this... Like we have here in small, you have all this in the tree, in some forest, and it's really strange to see.
Right.
They exploit it, but don't cut the tree. They just exploit the branches. So the branches go straight ahead, so the wood is still straight, but they don't need to cut the the main branch. It's
because they're sacred. 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 I mean, the trees are sacred, you know, and they have a kami. A kami is a, like a local god.
Yeah, yeah.
So the kami inhabit the tree. So, you know, you go up, when you go up to a tree that is specifically known to where a kami inhabits, I mean, you know, you do a clap and or you may want to talk to it and ask it for advice or a favor or something like that. But you definitely, before anything else, you pay your respects to it. And there's no way you could cut it down. It's spiritually not on.
It's the first thing I felt when I entered the domain here. I said, like, oh, we are not alone. Oh, there are energies all over.
Absolutely.
And it's not only about sheep watching us from fox or something. And I don't know how you live here. Like, how do you express it?
Well, it's weird because I don't know, probably lots of people, you know, I lived in the city and I was very, you know, sceptical, modern, didn't have any views like that. But living here for 7 years is just, it's like really weird. Yeah. I remember the first time I came to Dartmoor, I thought that I saw fairies and I was like, oh my God, what the hell? And I could understand for the first time what it meant to think that you could see a fairy. And like, just, you know, it's probably just flies or it's the corner of your eye, but it's the possibility. And it's that, like, and it's just, it's weird. It's so strange. I mean, it's very, very big around here. Like most of the people, especially within the artistic poetry especially, which is my particular thing, world. It's like they had a couple of, it was about 5 years ago, there was a woman, a Lakota woman, who she contacted some women around here and said that she'd had a dream that there needed to be cleansing ceremonies because of the witch trials in Europe. And so she came to Europe with native women from America, and they came and did ceremonies across Europe, and it was kind of like a weird renaissance that's happened in the last few years of loads of people calling themselves witches. And it's just really common for the, you know, like, for example, you might go to a stone circle you know, equinox, which is not particularly big time, but there might be like 100 people there when you get there. It's like really big around here, and there's just so much mystical stuff in the air, and everybody's really interested in myth. Well, not everybody, but there's a lot of interest in mythology and the occult practices and all that sort of stuff.
But what does these practices brings to you as a human being in the land? If you admit that it exists, if you admit that we need the land for these questions, like, okay, what does this part, magical part, energetic part, traditional part of the land has to bring us in our lives? Except from doing the laundry is one, but what about the rest? What about the daily life that these things can bring to us?
Yeah, it's weird because, I mean, as an artist, you know, for me it's such a huge thing that, you know, you'll sit in a place and then you'll write words and then you'll look back at those words and realise that there are so many symbols in what you've written which are to do with this day, that, you know, the goddess Epona, for example, is like the 13th of June, and you'll write a poem on the 13th of June, and then later you'll research Epona and you'll be like, oh my God, everything in this poem is a symbol of Epona. Yeah. And that's just because you've sat and observed the landscape. And it's to do with, like, there's so much within our psyches, and you don't even need to see it as supernatural. You could see it as evolutionary. We've spent so many millennia with the land that there are so many symbols within our minds which we don't which we're too cluttered usually in everyday world to access, and you have to be quiet and listen to the land. That's what I find anyway. And obviously you can bring that over into your daily life if you want to, but
yeah.
It's easier around here.
Yeah. No, it's profound. We have an ancient linden tree at our home, and it's protected by a tree protection order. And you wonder, how did this tree get a tree protection order on it? How did that happen, you know? It's as if the tree asked for it. Do you know what I mean? It's saying, I need to be here. I'm a part of this landscape, and I'm an integral part of this landscape. And I mean, this tree is huge. It's very, very old. And our home is built on the slope of a hill that goes down to a stream. And the root system of that tree holds our landscape together. If you cut that tree down, the landscape would be altered forever. I mean, it holds everything. And it's a sacred tree to me. I mean, I talk to it every morning, you know, and it actually centers me for the rest of the day to talk to that tree. And I'm so grateful that it's there, you know, this one huge tree. And I've tried and tried to find out why it's got a TPO on it. I mean, it is protected by the government, you know, and it's in our garden. And, you know, and the previous owners of our home said, oh, it's such a pain to have this tree here. You know, we'd have more sunlight and less shade. And we tried to get it cut down, but it's got this TPO on it. And, you know, we just feel so lucky that it's got the TPO, because we now have a new neighbor next door who says, oh, you know, that tree is so tall. If there was a bad storm, it would land on our roof or something. And we just smile and say, TPO, you know, and they can't touch that tree.
I really think that about the Dartington yew tree.
Oh.
It's just ridiculous. I mean, Dartington is a really cool place. It goes through lots of phases, but it's essentially a huge arts sort of complex covering hundreds of acres with artist studios. Sound Art Radio is based there, and it's just a place of sort of great relaxation and creativity for lots of people around here. And there's a massive yew tree in the grounds, which is about 2,000 years old. It's like, it's amazing. It's like 2 or 3 meters wide, and it's got like a huge gash down the middle of it, so it looks like a huge vagina. So it's
wonderful.
Just there isn't a better symbol of
Sheila Nagy.
Sheila Nagy. Sheila Nagy. Yes. Sheila Nagy. Yeah. So you really get Sheila Nagy in Devon, that's for sure. You know, I think when I lived in Oxford, I would hear, oh, that's a Sheila Nagy, and I'd be like, oh, that's strange. But here in Devon, suddenly it all comes together, you know?
Yes.
And without even needing to explain it or whatever, it's just really neat.
It's very woman-centered here as well, which is really amazing. Like, I find it strange. If you go to some other parts of the country, you'll see, like, men kind of who fancy themselves as wizards with staffs and long beards and stuff, but you just don't get that around here so much. It's everywhere you go, it's women,
and lots of new moon circles and you know, and equinox. I mean, people meet up, like Kerry was saying, they meet up on the night of an equinox or a solstice around a fire. And you know, for us it's not 100, it's like more like 30 people or 20 people, like that. But it's still, you know, it's like we have to do that because the earth expects it of us, you know, that we turn up, you know, and mark these things the same way we mark the directions, you know. But it's almost like
like the earth is telling us, asking us, inviting us to do these things. It's not like something that's learned. It's a strange thing about Devon. And it does put fairies in mind, you know, things whisper in your ear here. It's a very magical place. And it does inform your life, and it does change your life. It's changed mine, that's for sure. Yeah. No, I always thought of witches as, you know, these Herne the Hunter and all of that, you know. But no, here, I mean, there are witches everywhere, and they're lovely. They're just really neat people.
Are you part of them, maybe?
Am I a part witch? I wouldn't mind being a witch, I think.
Maybe you are.
I could be. Maybe the earth is informing me. Hele-o-e, ahele-o-e, ahele-o-vale-no-e. That's the one that we do in Hawaii. It's the short form. But whenever you go, like when I go from Somerset into Devon, I always start in the car, I'm driving, I'm going from Somerset to Devon, ahele-o-e, ahele-o-e, ahele-o-vale-no-e. I mean, it's just sort of automatic.
And you feel it when you ask, it's about the wind or something. It can be about a fly, like, annoying you or something, say that you're not welcome now.
At this moment.
At this moment,
and
the way
okay.
you did it, or blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's the same when you pick plants and flowers and blah, blah, you ask, you know, and if there's something, you're like, okay, it's not my place, I have to go.
And then we've got lovely gatekeeper butterflies that are making a comeback. We're getting more and more of them again. But when we ask here in England, I mean, this is what I've learned from people who practice here, that often you'll actually see gatekeeper butterflies just saying it's okay. You know, they'll be like in front of you saying it's okay, you can come through here. And yeah, because like sometimes you'll pass by a tree or you cannot. You have to ask first.
Yeah, it's
a very strong feeling.
Like this one when you arrived there, you know? This one. Mm. This one, I felt it like, okay. Well, I stopped to the fire and I was like, he was calling me like, hey, I'm there and I'm the boss. And I was like, okay. And we took a little time before going in, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes you don't ask, but there's something like, okay, we're in presence of something and just consider it.
It's so important to feel that and to sense that. I think it's crucial. I don't know why. I mean, it just seems desperately important to me to know where we're situated and what our relationship is with everything, with, you know, these lovely rocks and the moss and everything. You know, and the stories they tell. I mean, I'm sure if we, I mean, this tree here has stories to tell. It is no surprise that it stopped us here because it wants us to bavarder, you know, and all this. It's a very talky kind of tree.
And the berries.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you have this kind of asking before entering in the land for you people from here in the Dartmoor?
I just sometimes get very strong, like if I'm doing automatic writing, I get very strong messages sometimes of, and sort of realization that you're on a, like a burial mound or this sort of thing. I think there are a lot of places on Dartmoor where you get a sense of being in a graveyard, which is a strange thing, but that's,
it happens.
It really is with like rock, it's because of the rocks. You just really get that strong sense in lots of places, strangely. It's granite stones, so.
That's why I keep saying it's not something supernatural, because it's actually, you actually hear it, you know, and when your automatic writing is going on, it's there and it's on the page, you know, and you are a part of that process, you know, so... And I don't really know what supernatural means, because it's, to me, this is all natural, isn't it?
It's energy, actually, just like a pendule or something.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
It's the same state maybe you put yourself in when you have to write automatic than when you are a canal, actually, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, yeah, definitely. I think the other thing is going back to the butterflies is definitely like animals, you know. If there's any, you know, they definitely can guide you across the landscape if you're lost and that sort of thing, especially the very rare occasion that I've seen hares have just, they always come to you at really amazingly important times. I find it's like if you decide that you're going to go and take some time to like do some research of the land and really like, you know, do some sort of art project, you're bound to see a hare. And I hardly ever see them, but it's always like, if I'm, you know, it's like a sign that yes, this is the right thing to be doing. It's amazing.
Did you notice that there were a few friends with us now?
Yeah, birds have come. Yeah, it's wonderful. Lots of them too.
Sheila Nagig is a collective radio piece made by Kerry Priest, Maggie Shade, Jihan Marasinga, and Karine Demange. Editing, Karine Demange. With gratitude for the good vibes and voices of Alice Armstrong, Anne-Marie Bella, Primal Bat, George Brock, Stuart Cruz, Pauline Day, Anna Drazen, Kat Guy, Lucinda Guy, Jess Langton, Sarah Lawrence, Mark Peacock, Roshani Ramas, and the Mavi River, the sources of Plym, and all Dartmoor energies and invisible inhabitants. Thanks to all of you.
End of transmission. Find us on the internet, radia.fm. Over and out.